This is Sebastian, and to the best of my knowledge, I am the only Game On minion holding down the fort in the land of elephants and lions.
Directly with the correct amount.
D20 Radio, your gamer's role.
www.d20radio.com. Game On.
Gamer Nation, it's Saturday, March 21st, 2009, and this is episode number 14 of Game On. If you're keeping score at home, why? I'm your host, Brian. Joining me today is the fulcrum that Archimedes was looking for, Andy.
Oh, if you think my fulcrum's good, wait till they try my pie.
Oh, no.
And you thought I wouldn't have a comeback for that.
Oh, boy. I'll get you yet. You and your little dog, too.
Yes, just call me Dr. Lucky.
Uh-huh. How you doing, Andy?
I'm just fan-diddly-tastic.
Fan-diddly-tastic?
Fan-diddly-tastic.
That's some kind of word I don't want a definition to.
Well, okay. Well, you know, yeah. Hey.
Yeah, that's good.
The duck gets the week off.
Oh, okay. There's a duck?
There's a duck.
Dogs and ducks. I don't know what's going on around here.
I haven't an idea.
Not
a clue.
Yeah. Well, that's not unusual.
No, actually it isn't. It's par for the course.
So give us a clue about what we're going to be talking about today.
A clue? Today's topic will be role-playing games. We'll discuss how Brian and I first got into the hobby and what systems we like to play. Or imagine playing if we can't get a group.
Ah, yes. What a humdrum conundrum. Upkeep phase.
Well, Gamer Nation, it isn't every day that we get to thank someone who has had such an impact on the show. And that's because you folks aren't sending any bumpers in. Seriously, what's up with that? Just because we don't mention it every show doesn't mean you can't send some in anyway. Try it. You'll like it. Send it to Game On at d20radio.com and hear your very own voice on this very own show.
Here's what's been going on around the D20 Radio Network this busy little week.
The Holocron has produced another Rock'em Sock'em episode. Number 7 deals with all the latest juicy goodness from BioWare and the upcoming Star Wars The Old Republic MMO. Preliminary reports and reviews of the Bounty Hunter class, the current issue of the Threat of Peace webcomic, the latest online developer video, and some information about D20 Radio's guild, The Order of 66. All show up in Holocron episode number 7, Bounty Hunters and Spring Cleaning.
And speaking of The Order of 66, The Order 66 podcast, episode number 58, tackles the Enforcer prestige class from Star Wars Saga Edition RPG. GM Dave and GM Chris get you up against the wall while they answer listener questions, visit Ord Mantell with Cody, and generally provide an arresting experience for all in Stop and Come Out with Your Dice Up.
Okay. Meanwhile.
Don't tase me, bro.
Meanwhile, the Super Gaming Podcast Posted up show number 9. It's a St. Patrick's Day theme. Well, sort of. As mostly Joe and special guest star, entirely Brian, talk about Green Lantern and the almost impossible character. Listen in and take heed, Gamer Nation. Be amazed.
Andy, have you been to the Cinematic Attic yet?
The Cinematic Attic. No, I'm not even sure what that is. I can only imagine.
It's the newest podcast to hit the internets from D20 Radio.
Really?
Yeah, truly. It features Brev and Ted. I don't really know who Ted is, but Brev is GM Brev from Minnie's Mayhem. Uh-huh. Anyway, it features Brev and Ted talking movies. In their first episode, they tackle the movie behemoth, that is The Watchmen.
Oh.
Yeah. They review and analyze the show, all while keeping a firm grip on a certain big blue dingus. Check it out and disagree with them in the community forums. They asked for it.
Big blue dingus. Dirty dingus McGee. Oh man, this just gets weirder every time we do it. Also posting up this week is the third and final part of Radio Free Homlet's D&D Experience shows. The DMs talk to some other DMs at the Experience about rules everyone thinks they know that turn to not, in fact, be correct. Also covered is some discussion of the classes in the Player's Handbook 2. Give it a listen and find out where you've been goofing up in D&D 4th Edition. You'll still die horribly, but at least now you'll know why.
There's lots to see around the D20 Radio Network. Check it all out at www.d20radio.com and join the community forums by following the links on the front page. We're all about community interaction, so give us a shout or ask questions or even kibitz on the shows as you see fit. There's a bevy of like-minded people there to get to know. Plus, it's the only place where you can find out about upcoming D20 Radio Network projects.
Bits and Pieces.
It's time for the news! Huzzah! We're all informative and stuff.
Yeah, and I'm actually going to go out of order here, so this will make it fun and interesting.
Oh, thanks. Yeah.
There are many gaming blogs offering top-notch material for use in your RPG campaign. Have you ever wished you could have that material in book format so you could bring it to game night without using a laptop or smudgy printouts? The gods are smiling on you this day. Open Game Table will be released next week, collecting the cream of the internet crop in one book. Open Game Table was put together by a volunteer coalition of gamers, bloggers, writers, and artists. Artists! It has 47 articles culled from dozens of gaming blogs. There's a slight bias toward 4th edition D&D, but there are a lot of articles useful to any gamer or GM, regardless of system or setting. How to form a good gaming group, how to design a campaign setting, character and story ideas, and more fill the pages, along with a healthy dose of black and white art. The Core Mechanic at www.thecoremechanic.com has all the details on how to order the book, plus links to a bunch of in-depth reviews. Does that sound cool or what?
Actually, it does. What all is that going to encompass? Is that just as it says, it's just a mishmash of things that they've put together that they think people need to know, or...?
It's supposedly it's like the best of the best from various gaming blogs and whatnot that includes play hints and different little, you know... I guess it's just kind of a guidebook for D&D, really. I mean... You know, like it says, campaign setting design and gaming groups and that kind of stuff.
That's general advice. Actually real cool because I think that's something that has been fairly lacking over the years in RPGing is that they don't really give you any hints or help on how to do this stuff. They give you lots of information and lots of books to draw from, but they don't really give you a starting place on the map and a guide on how to use all that information, because a lot of that stuff is just sitting there, and you really don't know what to do with all of it.
Yeah.
So that's a pretty neat idea, really. Yeah.
And the other neat aspect of it is, if you're not like one of the role-playing game designers, or you know, part of one of the publishing companies or whatever, you can produce some really good stuff, and it just never gets noticed because it's, you know, all somewhere else, and you're not part of the in crowd, I guess.
Yeah, and yeah, because there's a lot of people out there that write their own scenarios and stuff. It just gets posted up on a web blog somewhere, and a lot of people don't get to partake in it.
Yeah, and this kind of gives an opportunity for you to see what else is out there, and maybe notice somebody who's equally as good as one of the big boys.
Yeah, that's cool. I like that idea. Why didn't we think of that?
Because we have trouble thinking just what we're going to do in a show, let alone...
Oh, well, I guess there is that.
Yeah.
Goodman Games is pleased to announce that it has partnered with RPG Now to provide an innovative new service to purchasers of its new 4th edition print magazine, Level Up. Every physical copy of Level Up will include a code that allows the buyer to download a free ebook edition from RPG Now. This code functions whether the purchase is made online, in a retail store, or via subscription. In effect, every print purchase includes the PDF version for free, regardless of where it's purchased. While other publishers have offered similar services exclusively to online purchasers or subscribers, Goodman Games is the first RPG publisher to offer a level playing field to brick-and-mortar retailers, combined with a unique pricing structure for Level Up. Customers have a strong reason to visit their local game store. They can choose to pay $1.99 for both print and PDF editions at their favorite game store, or pay $4 online. And that's another neat idea. I like that too.
Yeah, I thought these were both really good ideas. That's why I threw them up here in the Okay, but put them up in our little news section.
Yeah, I like that.
Basically, that means if I go down to the game store, and this is assuming my local game store ever gets their act together.
And carries this book.
I go down and buy this thing. I can print off whatever I want out of it in a pristine, crystal clear, wonderfully done PDF version.
Yeah, that is really nice, because I personally like to have most of my books in print format, but it's also nice to have a PDF so you can put things on your computer, you can take them with you, put them on a jump drive, or like you say, if there's information that you want, you can print it out and make leaflets for your players.
That's
really neat.
Yes, indeed.
I like it.
Okay, and now we will discover the reason I reordered these in the middle of the podcast.
Okay.
Guess what, Gamer Nation? It's Worldwide D&D Game Day.
Really?
Yeah. You didn't know that?
I didn't know that.
I didn't know that either.
I usually get a something.
Yeah.
Somebody usually tells me about it.
Yeah, I usually get something too. Like an email or some advertising or anything really to let me know that it's happening.
Yeah, because aren't you like a sanctioned RPGA DM type of guy?
I am, yes. I am a registered sanctioned RPGA dungeon master. And in fact, I have run numerous D&D game day events previously.
Indeed. The last two were, I believe, at my store.
The last two at your store. The very first one at my store. And that was quite the blowout, let me tell you.
Yeah.
All in all, I'd say I've probably put a good 50 or 60 people through the various Dungeons & Dragons game day events. 50 or 60 people. And in our local area, that's pretty darn good.
Yeah, it actually is.
Yep.
That's a lot of people.
That's a lot of people. Exposed to D&D, some of them for the first time.
And they've never been quite the same since.
That's true. But you would think that they might want to alert me, just on the off chance that I didn't go to Wizards' website or happened to randomly wander into my local game store on my once-a-month visit and noticed that it was posted in very small print up on their very giant calendar. Yeah, that's really the only way I found out about it, was that I noticed that their calendar had an event up there in very small print saying Worldwide D&D Game Day. And I said, oh, is that this weekend? And the gentleman behind the counter looked at me and said, oh, yes, yes, it is. And I went, really? Not a lot of what you might call advertising around the store for it, is there? Nope.
Yeah, I remember, gosh, when we were running our D&D Game Days, there was... Three months lead time. We had huge posters up. We had sign-up sheets. We had... they'd send us miniatures and maps and all kinds of stuff that were going to be used, and had a great turnout for it. I don't know why they're not capitalizing on that. I mean, that's a huge draw.
Yeah. And I the other fun part is, I said, oh, well, when do the festivities start? And the gentleman behind the counter looked at me and said, 5 p.m.
5 p.m.?
5 p.m.
Good Lord, man. That should be an hour after opening. They should be rolling stuff out.
Well, technically, I think it should be an hour before opening. But you open early. Now, I don't know. He may not have had a whole lot of interest in it. It's hard to say. We're a pretty finicky batch around here when it comes to D&D systems, so maybe...
Well, it is. I mean, and since 4th edition has come into play... I think the player base has shifted quite a bit, so that's a distinct possibility. But yeah. Still, usually if there's a free D&D game going on and you're getting miniatures and stuff like that, there's usually a pretty good turnout. But you know, things may have changed over the last year or so.
Maybe. Still really doesn't explain why Wizards didn't bother to get any information out to me. Now, maybe I'm just special and they sent it out to everybody but me.
Well, you are indeed special, but, you know, who knows?
Yeah. I know last year I got an email several months ahead of time that told me when game day was coming. And, in fact, if I remember correctly, I approached you guys about game day and running it and whatnot.
If that's very possible. I mean, our distributors, as well as Wizards of the Coast, always sent us... flyers and information, you know, well ahead of time, you know, at least 2 months lead time we had on most of that stuff.
Yeah.
But, I'm kind of surprised. I don't know if that was Wizards dropping the ball or if that was the game store or a combination, so.
Yeah, I'm not really sure. I mean, at a bare minimum, I used to get about a month ahead of time, I'd get a brand new pack of RPGA cards. And I, you know, to hand out and get people signed up and whatnot. And I don't know if it was just that was just coincidence or that was part of the plan or what the deal was, but I got literally nothing this year. Not a thing.
Interesting. Now they actually moved it up this year, didn't they? Because didn't it used to be in like October or something?
Yeah. Well, when the first one came out, it was October. It was the anniversary of the 50-year anniversary of D&D.
Okay.
The very first year, and then I think the next one was in October as well. And then they've sort of started to creep forward quite a bit.
Yeah.
And it's my understanding that the way it's going to work now is that anytime there's a major new release, for example, Player's Handbook 2, they'll be doing a game day, which I guess is all right. But I really like the ability to you know, kind of celebrate the whole birthday thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even though I, you know, didn't have much to do with the birth of D&D, but still.
It's something we're celebrating.
Yeah, as we'll come to find out, it's had its little influence on our lives.
Indeed it has.
Yeah. So, I guess. Well, where can I find out more?
I don't know, on the interwebs possibly?
Yeah, the interwebs. Where on the interwebs would I go looking?
Oh, you're probing here. You're wanting more information.
Yes, the probe.
You can get more good gaming news at the following websites: www.gamingreport.com, www.boardgamenews.com, and www.robotviking.com. Check them out at your earliest convenience. And now, on with the show.
Now, some of you may be wondering, wasn't there supposed to be some definitions or something?
At some point. The duck left.
The duck left, yeah. Yeah, we decided that for this show, and maybe this show only, we were going to dispense with what did he say. Because really, we couldn't think of any couple of definitions you needed right off the bat to get through this show. So we're just going to launch right into it. Like a little bat clinging to the side of a booster rocket. We're going to launch right into this.
I think I've seen this cartoon.
Actually, it was... Oh, never mind. That's a digression. It was something that happened in the last shuttle launch. That's okay. I'll tell you about it later. It's all right. Anyway, what we want to talk about is a couple of things here. How Andy and I got into RPGs in the first place. You know, what our initial experience was, that kind of stuff. Who got us our first fix and then, you know, started charging us for it. And also some role-playing systems that we've come to like over the years. Things that we've enjoyed playing in or reading about or whatever. So I guess, actually, Andy, I'm gonna start with you. I will pretend to be the interviewer here.
Well, that makes me the interviewee.
That would make you the interviewee. So, Andy, tell us, how did you get into RPGs the first time?
You know, I don't truly remember.
Okay, thank you. Moving on.
Okay. now, I think I want to say my mother had actually picked it up for me. I want to say it was the Red Box back in, what, 77, possibly?
Oh.
First edition? I think that's what it was.
Your mom got it for you?
Yeah, of all people, my mother got it for me. And you know, I played D&D. I listened to Ozzy Osbourne, and you know, I'm still alive, haven't committed suicide or killed anybody else. So that kind of dispels a few myths.
all the fun ones.
All the fun ones, anyways. yeah, my mom picked it up for me, as I recall, and I thought it was an interesting concept in gaming. It was, you know, new to me at the time, obviously, and it kind of progressed from there. I'd picked up D&D and the original from what TSR was like Gamma World and a few others from that time period, and kind of fell out of role-playing for actually several years throughout my 20s. And then later on, I picked it up again when I met a new group of friends and have been back into it ever since.
Cool. So what was do you remember at all what your first game was like?
I really don't. I remember setting up a small dungeon crawl between myself and my sister, and of course, you know, at the time I was maybe 10, so that would make my sister about 7, and so neither one of us really had a grasp or concept as to what the hell was going on. So, you know, we were killing stuff and dying horribly, but probably in junior high, one of our most memorable games that I can think of, a group of us, we would play every day at lunchtime. And that, I mean, we went, I think that campaign lasted the entire school year. And it was just, I mean, we did everything. We were, you know, sailing ships and conquering island tribes and just, you know, going anywhere and doing everything. It was crazy.
That sounds pretty cool, actually.
I don't remember a lot of my first games, but I remember getting into it and enjoying it. It was different, like I said. It was used to playing, you know, the older board games, you know, Monopoly and Sorry and things of that nature. Role-playing was just, you know, completely and totally new and different. And there was such a, you know, it only took a couple of years for role-playing to get such a stigma about it that I've always found that to be interesting, that somebody could blame so many problems of the world on a role-playing game. I just never have been able to figure that one out.
Yeah, neither have I. yeah, really, it made no sense at the time what was going on. But, you know, my parents, I can guarantee you, would never have purchased D&D for me. Because they'd heard all those rumors, and especially thought that all that bad stuff was going to happen to us, which I guess says more about what they thought about us than they did about the game, I suppose.
not as trusting as you'd hoped.
Yeah, well, it's kind of disappointing, but all right.
Yeah, well.
Of course, now, you know, now that we're, you know, all the age we are, they've given up all hope of ever redeeming us at this point.
Oh, well, of course.
My introduction to RPGs came when I was in the fourth grade. It was actually the summer of my fourth grade year. A kid who lived across the street from us, who was my best friend at the time, came home one day with his box set. And I don't really remember what the color of the box set was. I think it might have been the red box, but I'm not sure. Anyway, and it was Dungeons and Dragons. Okay, so what's that? Great. Dungeons, and it's got dungeons and it's got dragons. What more do you want? I don't know. Apparently what we wanted was about 2.5 reams of graph paper at some point.
Yeah, there was quite a bit of that was required.
We read all the rules and everything, and it sounded cool. We didn't really know much about it. You know, it's fourth grade. You're, what, 9, 10 years old, something like that?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. We didn't really have a clue. But what eventually ended up happening is after he'd read through all the rules, and I'd read a little bit of the rules, and we made up some characters and you know, kind of figured that bit out, we started playing this thing every afternoon after school. And a lot of it was the old style dungeon crawl. I mean, really, a dungeon crawl. We would draw the craziest, most goofed up dungeon maps you've ever seen. There would be like fountains of water next to lava rooms, next to, you know, spiked pits and secret doors everywhere. Every room had a secret door.
Oh, at least one.
Yeah, pretty much to the point where it wasn't really a secret door anymore because you knew there was going to be one there. And, you know, twisty little, you know, you ever draw, okay, you have to have done this at some point. You draw the dungeon and there's always that one room that's just a big spiral in on itself.
Oh, yeah.
And then, you know, it doesn't go anywhere. It just dead ends at the center of the spiral, and then you've got to turn around and go back out again.
Yeah, you backtrack your way out.
Yeah. Yeah, every dungeon had one of those. of varying sizes and shapes, but every dungeon had one of those. And, you know, there was like I say, pit traps and you know, all kinds of rocky little rooms and rooms that are, you know, clearly made by some guy with a protractor and a spirit level and all that kind of stuff because they were so straight and everything, and all mixed in together, and it didn't matter what. And then basically what we did was we opened up the monster manual and shook it, and whatever fell out was what was in that dungeon.
that's known as a random population.
Yes, whether it made any sense or not. Ecologies be damned. And, you know, so you would have dragons in the first room and, you know, rats in the middle somewhere and orcs all over the place and ogres and bugbears and medusas and anything else we thought looked even vaguely cool or was drawn with, you know, breasts would show up in the dungeon somewhere. And it didn't matter, because it was all there just to be killed. That's what we did. We'd storm the front entrance and go all the way through the whole thing, and we'd even backtrack to get rooms we'd missed. And, you know, so it was a thorough dungeon cleaning.
Yeah.
And we'd fight all the way through this thing, and diplomacy? What's diplomacy for? That seems useless. Let's not put any points in that.
And shoot first, ask questions
that's right.
later.
That's right. You don't have to be smart to swing an axe, so that's our dump stat there, And, oh, strength. Pump that strength. Yeah. There we go. And that's really what it was like for us. It was just absolute crazy, you know, sword to sword fighting all the way through the thing. And I don't, you know, I don't remember too much about the exact rules for the red box. But I'm fairly certain at first level, our wizard shouldn't have been shooting fireballs.
Yeah, probably not. Yeah.
And yet somehow he always was. I don't know how that worked. And we had many a character that got all the way from level 1 to level 20 in about, 2 weeks.
Yeah, it was amazing how fast you could level up.
Yeah. It really was. We had one caveat, though, which was that our DM, who's the kid across the street who owned the game, he couldn't use any of the demons or any of that stuff. Demon-related stuff in the game because his parents were Catholic.
I'm surprised he had the game at all at that point.
Yeah, it was kind of funny. We worked a way around it a little bit. It's no, Mom, it's not a demon. It's the Lollipop Bandit.
The Lollipop Bandit.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
So we had all that kind of stuff. And I will say this, though. Those campaigns, such as they were the only times I ever got characters up to level 20, ever got them maxed out in any way, shape, or form. Everything I've done since then has gotten to about level 10 or 11 and then gone poof.
Yeah.
So it was you know, it was fun time. We had lots of free time on our hand back then.
Yeah, back then that didn't seem to be a problem. Nowadays you can't get five people together to draw up a character sheet, much less play in a campaign, but
yeah. Anyway, so that was my introduction to it. And then at some point, it dawned on me that the only reason this kid was the GM was because he owned the game. And we were kind of tired of having him run the thing the whole time, because he got to be pretty darn arbitrary there towards the end. I mean, even more arbitrary than it sounded like he was being in the first place. So the brilliant idea dawned on me, all right, here's what I'll do. I'll go buy my own game system, and then I can be the DM of that one. Now, knowing I couldn't do Dungeons and Dragons because my parents wouldn't let me, I sought alternatives. And of course, the only alternatives we were aware of were the ones put out by TSR. So I ended up with, you ready for this one?
Mm-hmm.
I ended up with Star Frontiers.
Yes.
Star
Frontiers.
I walked into the Fred Meyer store, and it was sitting on the shelf.
Really?
Yeah. I kid you not. I got it from Fred Meyer. And it was the purple Star Frontiers Alpha Dawn box set. And I still have it. It's still in my collection in various random locations because the box has long since disintegrated.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they usually don't last for 20 years. So.
Yeah, but I still have it. And, read through the whole thing, and I was ready to make up characters. And, let's see, I got it when I was about in the fifth grade. And I finally got to play a game of it by the time I hit my junior year in high school.
had it for a while, did you?
Yeah. It seems that if he wasn't going to GM, then he wasn't going to play at all.
Those.
Yeah. So rather than have the whole group just, you know, fall apart because, oh, somebody wanted to do something different, I put it on the shelf and whatnot. The interesting thing is my brother tried the same thing. My brother's 5 years younger than I am, and he decided he was going to get a game and he was going to GM it. Well, being 5 years younger than I was, his tastes ran to a different direction than mine. And he ended up with the classic Steve Jackson game, Toon. Have you ever played Toon or seen Toon?
I don't think I've ever played it. I think I have heard of it, though.
The idea is it's a very rules-loose system. Basically, you play a cartoon character who can do absolutely anything a cartoon character can do. Think Bugs Bunny, Daffy Duck, that kind of stuff.
Right.
Toon. And, you know, I've read through it a couple of times. I think it's also now in my collection at some location or other. But it was very loosely ruled. You didn't pay a whole lot of attention to what could and couldn't happen, because technically anything could happen.
Right.
You know, you could pull the Titanic out of your hip pocket and whack somebody over the head with it, that kind of thing. But yeah, that's kind of how we got into RPGs. And of course, it's all ballooned out of hand and out of control since then.
Oh, it's definitely out of control at this point. But I'm almost certain it was the Red Box, but I know it was first edition D&D. That was it. You know, it hadn't been out very long. And after that, I believe I picked up Gamma World and Top Secret. I think were two of the other systems that I got into. And those were ones that took on fairly lengthy campaigns that we played throughout the school year when I was in junior high and high school. And like I said, after I got out of high school, I kind of got away from gaming other than video games and whatnot. But when I got back into it, there's so many game systems out there. It's just, you know, it's impossible to keep up with all of them.
Yeah. Let's see if I can remember the particular games that I've played over the years. D&D, Star Frontiers. We played Top Secret. We played, I think, Boot Hill a couple of times.
Man, that's an old one too.
Yeah, well, that's TSR.
That's TSR, yeah. Yeah.
We played, I think we got in a game or two of Tune. At some point, he upgraded to Advanced D&D, and we were introduced to the concept of Thaco.
Yay.
A few years later, it became 2nd Edition AD&D, and then, of course, played 3.0 and 3.5 and a little bit of 4E now, so that takes care of the D&D chain. Played or purchased Traveler. Boy, this is going to be a long list here. let's see, Traveler, Dark Conspiracy, Deadlands, all kinds of Aeon Trinity or whatever you want to call it, from White Wolf, Silver Age Sentinels. I can't do the chain in order. It's just too much.
Oh yeah, it's too disconjointed at this point.
Yeah, too much to try to remember. I think I've read through what is it, the Macho Women with Guns thing.
Yeah, I've never got to play that one, but I actually have. I believe all of the early renditions of the books. What is it? BTRC was originally the designer of that game.
Mm-hmm.
I think they had a first, second, third edition, but they were all very very small pamphlet size books. They were very cheap, easy to get a hold of, easy to play and run through. I've recently almost completed my collection, I believe, of all the first run books, and then I have the expanded version that was reprinted by Mongoose Publishing several years ago. So I actually have all those books. I just never have got a chance to play them. And of course, that plays on the, you know, whole thing with breasts.
So bazookas and bazookas.
Exactly.
Yeah. And let's see, also a couple of different editions of Paranoia.
Yeah, Paranoia.
And I don't know, there's a whole gamut of other things, and I'll eventually remember little bits and pieces of each and every one as we go along. But let's move on to the kind of the second topic we had here, which was role-playing systems we like. Now, keep in mind, Gamer Nation, between Andy and I, we've got 43 separate systems that we can remember.
Yeah, that's just what we can remember.
Yeah. I've got probably another, I'm going to guess about another dozen in storage somewhere that just aren't jumping to mind immediately. And I'm not sure about Andy. He's probably got quite a few as well. But what it comes down to is this. We've limited ourselves to picking five that we really, 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 really like. Really. And you want to start with one of yours, Andy, and then we can discuss it, and then we'll do one of mine, and we'll do it that way. How about that?
Okay, well, I know this is one you and I both enjoy, and this is one that you you introduced me to, and that is the Kingdoms of Kalimar campaign setting for D&D 3.5.
Yeah, that's we talked about this a little bit before. That's an excellent little setting in a reasonably decent rule set.
Yeah, I think so far 3.5 is still at this point in time it's still my favorite edition of D&D. I know there's people out there that will agree and argue with that, and it's still D&D at its heart as far as I'm concerned. But the thing that really made the game work for me was the Kalimar setting.
I prefer Kalimar as a setting for 3.5 for all my D&D, and I was at once dismayed and encouraged to discover that Kenzer and Company, the publishers of the Kalimar setting, are going to be doing it, redoing it for 4.0.
Right, I saw that not long ago.
Yeah, dismayed because that means if I get into 4th edition, I'm going to have to buy new books.
Books for it, yes. I I looked at that too because they're cranking out fourth edition books quite rapidly here lately.
Yeah. But yeah, the Kalimar setting, and like I said, we've talked about this before. I just like it because it everything you do has an effect in the setting, and things are kind of built into to trigger off one another, and it's just, I think, a very rich, very deep setting to play in.
Yeah, there's a lot of D&D settings out there, and I'm just not discounting any of them. So far I've just felt that Kalimar has been the most, I guess, in depth and well thought out, and I guess believable as far as settings are concerned.
Yeah, it's quite good.
I mean, you know, granted we're dealing with a fantasy game here, but it's still nice to be able to think in your mind's eye that this could actually be taking place somewhere, which makes the role playing experience that much more in depth.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so I'm going to offer up as one of my favorites, Serenity.
Yeah, I have to agree with you there.
Yeah, another setting. Now, okay, yes, this is based off of the Serenity movie and the Firefly series, and as such, it is sort of a fanboy deal. But it's another one of those things where there was a lot of room for additional storytelling. And not just based around, you know, one or two characters. We're talking like an entire living, breathing setting that again had elements that you could play around in and not hurt anything with.
Yeah, this was another one that was believable in its setting, but also made itself very playable. I mean, they gave you just enough to get the game started, but left so much of it so open-ended that you could practically do anything with it. And it really lent itself well in that role-playing system.
Yeah, and very gritty and very dangerous.
Very, very visceral. That a gunfight in Serenity, you know, you better have a character sheet sitting on hand somewhere.
Yeah, well,
if the dice don't go well, you're going to have a dead character.
Yeah, I put no less than 3 or 4 characters into the hospital, just in very minor gun battles.
Yeah, a very minor gun battle on board the space station in that one game we had. Yeah, almost our entire... Yeah. Our entire party wound up the infirmary.
Yeah, I had 2 of you in there at a time at one point. It was quite a thing. Yeah, and that's the thing. I don't really like systems all that much that where combat is almost a not really a serious thing. You know, it's one thing to sit there and lob fireballs at things and all this other stuff, but when you get down to like gunfights and that sort of stuff, I mean, you're not really supposed to be taking 17 or 18 hits,
right?
Before you go down.
Yeah, one, you're hurting. 2, you're probably going to be dead. And the damage ramps up so rapidly. And I think that's the way it should be. I mean, yeah, you can do other systems and do the Hollywood shoot 'em up type of thing, but I just like the way they did it in Serenity. It was very interesting.
Yeah. How about your next one?
I'm probably going to have to go with Star Wars Saga Edition.
Yes, Saga Edition.
Now, when I first got around to thinking about doing Star Wars for role-playing, it was right at the junction where they were talking about bringing Saga Edition out. And I couldn't decide whether I wanted to go with the current edition or wait for the new one to come out. And I had heard lots of interesting things about the new edition, but, you know, gamers, we tend to fear change, and we don't like our systems being monkeyed with. But I went ahead and bit the bullet and waited for the Saga edition to come out, and it is by far one of my favorite systems so far.
Yeah, I've got about half a dozen of the revised core rules system of Star Wars RCR. And I never really got that on the table. I think we did once. But it was so tied into what was happening with D&D 3035 that it never really felt all that much like Star Wars.
Yeah.
Then they announced that they were coming out with the Saga Edition stuff, and I thought, oh, God, here I go again. I'm going to have to buy another batch of books to play essentially the same system all over again with some minor rules tweaks here and there. And then I read the Saga Edition core rulebook, and I went, oh, hey, wow, this is way different.
Yeah, it really was an eye-opener once I read through the main rulebook. And it's odd because this was, you know, kind of the precursor to 4th edition. And as much as I can't seem to get my head around 4th edition, I can play Saga Edition all day long.
Yeah, Saga Edition was obviously different, smoother, and more like Star Wars just from reading the core rulebook without even having to get a game on the table. You could tell that this was going to be a better system just by reading through it.
Right.
So that was really impressive. And then the real selling point was when they came out with the Knights of the Old Republic campaign setting, and I pretty much collapsed after that.
Yeah.
I had to get everything at that point, and I still have to get everything at that point.
Yeah, I think I'm shy one, possibly two books at the moment, but...
Yeah,
I know. I know at least one since a new one came out just Tuesday. So I know I haven't got that one.
Right. Well, you got a month or so to get that one picked up before the next one comes out.
Yeah, before the next one comes out and they hammer me again.
Right. How about Deadlands? The original Deadlands.
How about Deadlands? You know, it's funny. A lot of these older games that I'm getting introduced to by you, it's nice to see something that hasn't been completely hammered or overtaken by the 3.5 edition of games. Now, Deadlands Revised or Deadlands Revisited?
Reloaded.
Okay, I know there's something in there. Yeah, that's basically a 3.5 shellacking on it. But the original Deadlands, now that we've got a chance to play through that, I'm just loving the way this system works.
Yeah, it's always been one of my favorites, just because it's got so much going on in it, mechanic wise. And I am a sucker for a game with some different mechanics. I got to tell you,
And this one's got a bunch of it going on. This is like a Rube Goldberg gone haywire. There's just all kinds of mechanics in this game.
Yeah, I don't particularly personally think that the whole D20 movement was all that great for RPGs, because it tended, I think, to overshadow and remove a lot of the options for other people to develop new systems and whatnot, because it was just easier to produce things in D20, you know, flavor it up a little bit and then turn it out, than it was to try to think about how your system could be best served by different mechanics. And that was one of the things I liked about Deadlands, was you had the cards, and you had the dice, and you had the, you know, the way your characters were built was different, and all that stuff. And then the setting was just like, oh my God, how can I not play this?
Yeah, it just takes a whole bunch of different stuff, and just crams it into this setting that's just ridiculously outrageous.
It's like a pre-apocalyptic setting instead of a post-apocalyptic setting.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you've got the Wild West theme going on, you've got demons, you've got magic, and you've got, I mean, there's just all kinds of different stuff in there. And it really does remind me of the old TV series Wild Wild West, with, you know, demons and magic and extra things thrown in there. Because you've got all these gadgets, and you've got the cowboys and stagecoaches, and I mean, just everything. So it's really been enjoyable.
It's got my other favorite thing, which is alternate timelines.
Yes.
I always like reading sci-fi alternate timelines and stuff, you know. And this plays, of course, off the Civil War that doesn't end.
Right. Yeah, that's also very interesting. It really, really makes you wonder what could have happened if, you know, events had changed somewhere along the way and different things started to happen.
Yeah. And it's just the combination of the setting and the mechanics, it all feeds together very well and gives you a really nice feel for the game. And again, combat is deadly.
Very much so. We found that out.
Yep. Especially combat you don't pay attention to.
Yeah, well.
Okay. Your turn.
My turn. You know, as much as 3.5 had become, I don't know, I guess a redundancy in gaming, it just, I mean, everybody was using the 3.5 rule set. And that's okay. There was some good stuff that came out of that. But as much as I dislike some of the things that came out of it, one of the things that I really had a lot of fun with and what really got me back into to GMing, especially as far as role-playing, was the D20 Modern system.
Yeah, that's on my list too.
And I just seems to work with a modern setting. I'm not sure what's specifically different about it from D&D or from any other game that people have used for the 3.5 system, but I just felt that it worked really well in the modern setting.
Yeah, it's strange. For some reason, it seems like it's a lot smoother.
It is. I mean, as long as it had been since I had ran a campaign, I think I had very little difficulty in running our campaign that we did with our modern setting, and I enjoyed the heck out of it.
Yeah, it's really hard to pinpoint exactly what makes it different. It feels properly cinematic. It's not trying to be a serious game. I mean, it's really not trying to say, okay, this is how things work in the real world.
Right. It's not trying to be a simulation. It's, you know, it is being a game. And I think we had more fun with the modern setting doing that because we were going into it with that thought. It was cinematic. It was, you know, Tom Clancy, over the top, spies, gun battles types of things, and, you know, we just had fun with it, and it really worked out.
Yeah, it worked out really well. And again, combat was a bad thing.
It was. I didn't manage to kill any of you guys, despite trying.
Yeah. Boy, you tried. But we certainly managed to cap our fair share of guys.
Man, I had a lot of dead NPCs at the end of that campaign.
Yeah. Okay, so that was D20 Modern. And I'm going to cheat here. I'm going to throw out the entire Tri-Stat system, which comprises games like Big Eyes Small Mouth, Silver Age Sentinels, Hong Kong Action Theater, and a few others. But it's the Tri-Stat system.
Yeah, that was another one that I had never played before that Yuna introduced me to, and it's, I haven't had a chance to play into it as much as I would like to, but what we have had a chance to play, it's a very interesting and innovative system. I particularly enjoyed the thought and the abilities that went into the character creation for Silver Age Sentinels.
Mm-hmm. And it's generally a pretty simple system to build characters in. You got, instead of having like six or seven different stats, main stats, you've got three. You've got body, mind, and soul, and then everything else is kind of based off of that, and then you have points to buy your abilities and powers with, and any skills you might need.
Yeah, as simple as the character creation was, I felt that it was much more detailed once you were done with your character. There was so much more abilities and guidelines and stats and things that you could put into a character with your point system, you know, just off of those three stats, that you could really detail or figure out, you know, the way you wanted to and make this superhero just exactly the way, you know, you had it envisioned in your mind.
Yeah, and for whatever reason, this game had a really nice, the system has a really nice flow to it when you're trying to do things. You've got your attacks and opposed defenses and all this, all this other stuff to keep track of, but for some reason, for me, the way it was finessed within the system itself was very nice and very smooth.
Yeah, it did work well for, you know, what we managed to get played on it. It was interesting the way things did flow, and it lends itself as far as storytelling when you're adding in NPCs and such it allows you to play the game probably much more smoothly than some systems would.
Yeah. And a lot of people don't like point buy systems because they become tedious and whatnot. I never found this one to be tedious. It was always fascinating to me to read up and figure out exactly how to apply a given power to achieve a given effect and how to apply your power modifiers to really tailor it to what you wanted it to be, and to make even characters with the same basic powers individuals with unique versions of those powers.
Yeah, well, when we sat down to make my character, I was really kind of flustered as to how I was going to do it, because again, the point buy system was kind of new to me, but what I had done with the points buy system had always been very crunchy and didn't flow very well. But when I sat down with you and you started showing me how the trees broke down on these, and how different powers created different effects, and how you could come by these things, man, I mean, that character really came to life.
Yeah, and the other neat thing about the Tri-Stat system, and it's not necessarily unique to the Tri-Stat system, but the other neat thing about it is that as a system as a whole, if you want to play at different power levels, you don't necessarily hand out more points from one version of the system to the next. You add bigger dice.
Yeah, that was something I thought was really interesting, because that was what I was used to in a point buy type of system. That's how you bumped up your character. You just, you know, gave it a bucket more extra points to it. The Tri-Stat system, you've literally got three different series of dice that you can draw from, and that's your power pool.
Mm-hmm. And so my next one is the Lord of the Rings game from Decipher. And you've played an introductory version of that.
I believe so, yeah. I think you ran us through
through the Mines of Moria.
The Mines of Moria, yes.
Yeah.
That didn't go well, as I recall.
Well, not for you so much. But it's... And I have to confess, I don't have a whole ton of experience with this system. But what I do have, I really, really like. And the other thing I really, really like is that Decipher spent some actual quality time getting the right feel for this system. It's based not on the books so much as it is on the movies that came out here a few years ago.
Right.
And first off, the books are gorgeous. Absolutely beautiful artwork inside and out. And really just amazing books to read through for no other reason than just to see the art and the stuff that's in it. Presentation is absolutely great. The system plays really well, and it plays very subtly, and it's got the right sort of feel to it for what you're trying to do and the setting that you're trying to work in. Tolkien and Middle-earth and the Lord of the Rings is not what you might call a really high-powered system. It has one or two, maybe three people in it that wield a lot of power and do so in a very obvious way. Everything else happens very subtly. And this system that Decipher came up with feels like the right match for that, at least as far as the movies go and as far as some of the bigger events in the books go.
I think this one came down, it was more of a, most RPGs are meant to be a cooperative endeavor, but I think this one pushed that idea a little bit further, in that you're not all playing individual superheroes. You're playing, you know, a hobbit in this, you know, small party that you've gathered together, and it's really going to take all of you working together to make it through.
Yeah, and it doesn't feel like it's a kind of a forced cooperation thing. Not like D&D 4th edition is, where you have to fill in the majority of these character types in order to have a successful adventuring party. That's pretty forced. I mean, it comes right out and says, you know, you need a defender, you need a meat shield, you need a, you know, all this other stuff.
Right.
In order for it to work. Whereas in the Lord of the Rings system, it doesn't feel forced like that. You kind of naturally want to create these characters that can support and complement each other. And it's pretty obvious that this character does this job, and he's not going to be very good at this other job, and you need to compensate for that. But it's more like a kind of a mutual compensation than it is like, okay, this is the role I'm filling, You know, you look at it and you pull out and say, okay, we need to do, you know, this over here. We need to have somebody who's going to be capable of sneaking in, somebody who's going to be capable of doing things at range and that kind of stuff. But we need it because this is the goal we're accomplishing, not because these are the slots that need to be filled.
Right. Yeah, at the, I don't know, fourth edition is still, I don't know, it's still new to us. We still haven't a lot of opportunity to play through it. But yeah, it does feel very, very forced, very pushed in one specific direction as far as having to fill specific roles in order for your party to be successful.
Yeah. And that's, you know, that's, I think, and like Andy said, we haven't really played a whole lot of it, but that is one of the things. Whereas a character in 4th edition, I just don't feel as versatile as I like to feel, you know?
Yeah, it's... Yeah, I think that's what it comes down to. I think they've really... I don't know what the term is, pigeonholed the classes as to what they're capable of doing. They've narrowed things down so much that you can only fill a specific role, and that's all you can accomplish. You can't... you know, multitask or multi-class like you have been able to in some of the past editions.
Yeah. I was just looking at the list of games that I have written down here, because that's the kind of thing I like to do. And I'm looking at this stuff, and I'm seeing some that I have... I've read the books, but I've never gotten it on the table.
Oh, I've got a bookshelf at home like that.
Yeah. Let me see here. I'm actually going to go through my list real quick. And keep in mind, this is just the ones I can remember. There are some tucked away in boxes and other places and in storage and whatnot. Systems that I have access to just here in the house. The Game On Tower. D&D 3.0, 3.5, and 4. Hong Kong Action Theater. TriStat. Star Wars RCR and Saga. Hackmaster, which is another fun little game. And by little, I mean, gosh, that's huge.
Yeah.
AD&D 1st and 2nd Edition. Big Eyes Smallmouth. Trinity. Heaven and Earth. Paranoia. Amber Diceless, which I probably will never, ever, ever, ever get on the table because it just makes no sense to me, really. I mean, I understand the concept behind it. I don't see why anybody would ever want to play that way. Middle-earth role-playing, a game called Legacy War of Ages, which surprisingly turns out to be Highlander, under a different name.
Interesting.
Yeah, Dark Conspiracy, Aces and Eights, Serenity, Lord of the Rings, D20 Modern, Silver Age Sentinels, Grimm, which we've talked about before on the cast, and that's one I intend to get on the table. I have a couple of GURPS books, but I don't have a GURP core rulebook. I've got like the little GURPS light thing. They're rules sampler, I guess you'd call it. Deadlands, Hole, or Human Occupied Landfill, featuring the sodomy bikers. I don't know why. That's one that's going to take the right crowd to play that. You know the crowd that plays Paranoia?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's going to take a more esoteric crowd than that.
Yeah, more esoteric crowd, exactly.
Yeah.
kind of like a Macho Wim with guns.
Yeah, well, it's worse than that, even, really.
Is it really? Oh, my
gosh.
Yeah,
it's pretty out there. Vampire, a couple of different, no pun intended, incarnations of Vampire. And then the Fallout RPG rules, which I've played those. They're very math intensive because they're modeled directly on the Fallout 1 and 2 video games. And they actually use the math that those games use. You wouldn't believe how much the computer handles math-wise in those.
Yeah, you want something that's crunchy, try the Fallout rules, yeah.
Yeah. But that's just what I have here in the house.
Yeah, the ones that I could remember just off the top of my head, and I know I'm forgetting several, D&D 3.5, and of course the Kingdoms of Kalimar setting, 4th edition. I have the original 1st edition of Gamma World from the old TSR games.
Oh, yeah. The green insides?
Uh-huh, yep. Yeah. As well as the last edition of it that was updated to the big hardbound books. Mm. And I don't remember the publisher of that one. I can't think of it off the top of my head.
Right.
But I have the setting for that. Silver Age Sentinels, I got the Tri-Stat system, the D20 Modern. Another old TSR, the old Top Secret.
Oh, yeah.
Still got the first edition box of that.
Cool.
Star Wars Saga Edition, Deadlands. I've got the main rule book and several supplement books for World of Darkness, and that's the actual D10 system, not the 3.5,
right.
As well as Mage and Vampire and Werewolf. I've got a few books for those, mostly just World of Darkness. The Dark Heresy role-playing game for 40K. Paranoia, Serenity, a couple different incarnations of the Mech Warrior Battletech role-playing system.
Mm-hmm.
Robotech, the old role-playing system. Of course, Macho Women with the Guns, Fallout. Exodus is actually the one that I have, which was to be the replacement for Fallout, but then Bethesda and rules lawyers and actual lawyers and everybody got involved, and it got changed to Exodus instead of Fallout. And one that I really enjoy the background and setting behind, and this is one that I have all the books for and never have been had a chance to play, is Shadowrun.
Shadowrun. See, when you were doing Shadowrun, I was doing Dark Conspiracy.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. Similar ideas, but totally different in execution.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, those we got quite the selection here. We should actually think about maybe playing some of these sometime. Oh wait.
We need a group.
Okay, so there you go, Gamer Nation. That's role-playing games are us. And as you can tell, we have quite a variety of things and quite a variety of other things. And then there's some other variety of other things there, too. I hope you followed all that.
We like variety.
Yeah. So I'm going to guess that no matter what style of game you want to play, there's probably an RPG system out there for you somewhere. You just have to hunt for it, because we cover quite the gamut of things from playing an actor in a movie all the way up to playing a Jedi Knight, or you know, playing a dwarf or a hobbit, or you know, cowboy or Indian or whatever you want to call it. You know, there's something for you out there to play.
A clone that gets destroyed as soon as he steps out of his habitation unit.
Yay, paranoia.
On the table.
Well, this is where we take a look at what Andy and I managed to play this week, both individually and together. So I'm going to start out simple. Andy, what'd you play this week?
Nothing.
Gosh, you're fun.
I know. I missed game night this week. My body completely fell apart on me, so I didn't make it over.
Yeah. It took you a couple of days to get it all stitched back together, too.
Yeah, I got this funny line going across my midsection here. Yeah. It's got a zipper on it. I don't know what to do. Whoa, no, don't upset it.
Yeah, no, that's don't, wrong. Yeah. Anyway, I actually almost didn't get to play anything this week as well, because you flaked. And in desperation, I took a game to work. So this isn't a game I would normally take to work, but we're starting spring break a day early. And so I thought I would bring one along. And the game I brought along was called Nightmare. Now, for those of you not in the know, which I'm going to assume is probably going to be most of you, Nightmare is kind of one of those VCR-based games. You have a tape, which has a countdown timer on it. And the idea is you race around trying to accomplish this particular goal. It's essentially a roll-and-move game. You try to collect these keys in a graveyard, so that you can get to the center of the graveyard to confront your nightmare, which if you do successfully, you win the game, race over, try to stop the VCR before the timer runs out. Now, that all seems simple enough, except that there's this thing called a gatekeeper who pops up on the screen every so often to interrupt your gameplay and issue challenges or instructions or demerits or whatever you want to call it to the players as they're playing the game. And the closer the game gets to the zero mark, which takes it about an hour, so the game has a guaranteed time limit of an hour on it, the closer you get to the end of the game, the more frequently he pops up to interrupt and complicate your gameplay. Now, this is a pretty cool little game. It's re-implemented later on in like a new version called Atmosphere. So perhaps some of you have heard of that as well, because that's a little more recent than Nightmare is. But all in all, it's still pretty fun. Still basic concept. Same basic concept. And I didn't actually play it myself. I gave it over to some of the kids and one of our other staff, who is known to be skittish. And let them play it. And I sat back and pointed and laughed in amusement as things happened. Because that's what I do. And sure enough, every time this gatekeeper came up on screen, this other staff member would jump out of her chair and scream a little bit, and yeah, because it's a big thunderclap, and all of a sudden he's right in your face, and you know, screaming at you, and the TV's turned way up, and the lights are way down, and it's, you know, it's all pretty exciting stuff. It's a lot of fun. If you've got, it plays up to six people. I don't know that you can find it as a new copy anymore. You can certainly look for either Nightmare or Atmosphere. A-T-M-O-S-P... I'll spell it eventually. A-T-M-O-S-F-E-A-R instead of P-H-E-R-E. You can probably find it on eBay or something similar. And the kind of the neat thing about it is, you know, if you play the game enough, you'll eventually learn the video and you'll know what's coming up and what to be prepared for and what time it happens and all this other stuff. But they made additional installments of the video. So there's, you know, a version 2 and a 3 and a 4, and you can occasionally find these floating around on eBay for nominal money, and check them out that way. And it's a lot of fun game, a lot of fun to play the game. A lot of fun to play the game is what it is, yes.
What is it?
It's a good game. And yeah, if you can find it, pick it up. It's good, especially for like a Halloween sort of theme and whatnot, you know, kind of have fun with it and check it out. And wow, that was a really short on the table there, sir.
Yeah, well, it was a short game week thing stuff. Yeah. Inevitably, the end of the show approaches. But first, we'll take a few moments and do some tidying up in Backchat.
Yeah, this is going to be kind of a short Backchat as well. All in all, this is going to be kind of a short show, I suppose. You know what? Once again, Gamer Nation, remember, we like bumpers. You can send us your bumpers at gameon@d20radio.com. And they should sound a little something like this. My name is... Please insert your own name. And I am a Game On Minion.
You can email us at that address, as well as send us requests for topics, questions, and general show feedback, if you are so inclined.
And that's about a 45-degree inclination right there, folks. A little to the left. A little to the left. What do you call a cow with only two legs? Lean
beef.
No, lean beef.
Oh, lean beef.
Lean beef, yeah.
A cow with no legs.
It's ground beef, yeah. Thank you very much.
Comedy!
It happens. Be sure to visit the D20 Radio forums while you're out and about on the internets at www.d20radio.com/forums, where you can chat with other members of Gamer Nation. You can see what's coming up on the network and look in on many other D20 Radio initiatives. That sounds fancy, doesn't it? Initiatives.
It does. Initiatives.
Yes. Soon we shall take over the world with our initiative. Once we've maximized our paradigm. I don't know what that means.
I haven't got a clue.
So until next time, Gamer Nation, game on!
This podcast is intended for entertainment and educational purposes only. All specific names, titles, or products mentioned are copyrighted by the respective rights holders. Some sounds and music are provided courtesy of soundsnap.com and freesound.org. Reboot is copyright Alliance Entertainment. All original content of this podcast and its related website are intellectual property of Game On and D20 Radio.
You can email us at the address, as well as send mother lover. We almost made it through the show.
Good job.
Yeah.
Very nicely not done.
You can email us at that address, as well as sent us request.
Yeah, I just pretend that's a D.
Okay. Well, I'm just, you know.
Try
I just read what's written here. Okay, here we go again.